know who part of the Trump Dream Team is. You've got Ken Starr. They've pulled him out of the, well, he wasn't doing anything anywhere. He got fired from Baylor. Alan Dershowitz taking some time off from taking therapeutic massages by old Russian women. And Pam Bondi. I mean, I guess Trump needed someone to look at. And not that she's not a qualified sort of lawyer. Besides, she dug him out of a bunch of trouble with Trump University. Yeah, I mean, it's gonna be really an interesting time to look at what we have here with Donald Trump and all of the craziness that comes along with it. And here to share some thoughts on all of that, I've asked our good friend Scott Dworkin to come talk with us. Scott is the co-founder of the Democratic Coalition, also host of the fantastic Dworkin Report. Scott, thanks for taking time for us.
Rick, what up, man? How you doing?
I'm good. I'm looking at the Dream Team. This is the Dream Team that's going to get him off. Or I guess that's the wrong way of framing that.
When Grant Stern told me who this Dream Team consisted of, I thought, and this is serious, I thought it was a joke. And then I saw who it consisted of, and it's still a joke. But it's like, it's exactly who you want to put together if you want to lose.
But here's the thing. I don't think he can lose because the Republicans aren't going to do anything. So you could put Manny Moe and Jack or Larry Curley and Moe or, you know, throw anybody in there. And he's not going to lose because the Republicans are not going. And they've told us they're not doing their job. When they took the oath the other day, they had their fingers crossed behind their backs.
They have two options. They vote to remove or they lose. It's not going to be, there's no middle ground there. They're going to have to deal with thousands of protesters at a constant during the entire trial. And if they want to try and have a sham trial without witnesses and without doing any kind of investigation, then they're going to pay a political price for that in regards to at the ballot box. People will not forget. But even they're already getting, angry about being followed by press at a constant and then protesters in the hallway. And we have, again, this is going to be bigger than Kavanaugh. It's going to be bigger than any public protest that we've had at the Hill probably ever. And I would not be surprised. It starts tomorrow, basically. I mean, the last few weeks we've had protests every day in the Senate office buildings, but it's going to expand and explode starting tomorrow with the Women's March. And then they're going to be protesting inside of Union Station. But there's going to be a lot of, I'm assuming, and I don't know about this personally, but I know that there's probably going to be some civil disobedience where they're in public spaces, you know, laying in the middle of the road or something like that. But this is going to be, I think it's a lot more serious than they think. They're not going to just be able to, you know, ignore this remove effort. They're not going to be able to do it. We're not going to let him do it. I'm going under the assumption, I'm working under the assumption that they have not made their minds up yet.
Right.
In reality, because it's what we have to assume.
Yeah, because I keep getting, you know, different, you know, thoughts back and forth. What's going to happen? Is McConnell just going to run this through like a hot knife through butter? Are they going to drag this out to some kind of show trial? And personally, I think it's in their interest, if it's in the senator's interest, to just get this over as fast as possible. I think having a long, drawn-out trial where they're in front of the mic all the time hurts them. Trump's going to get off, I think, no matter what. But I think this, you're right, I think it's going to hurt them immensely if they don't go this show trial way.
It's going to be, well, you know, it's always been up to us. You know, that it's always been, everything's been up to us. Flynn got fired because of public pressure. Sessions recused because of public pressure. Nunes recused himself in a fake way due to public pressure. Mueller was appointed due to public pressure. He was kept on staff due to public pressure. There have been firings that were prevented due to public pressure. The list is very long. We won back the House due to public pressure. And a lot of those reasons why we won back the House was for accountability. In less than a year, they impeached him. And now they're already at trial. We've come a really long way. And I've had the same people who've told me that he would never, ever, and these are, you know, professionals or experts or whatever, he'd never get impeached are the same people who tell me that he'd never get removed. And I remember how long that road was. So if they want to go down that route, you know, that's fine. But I refuse to accept that anyone has made up their minds. I'm not going to listen to that Trump propaganda. You know, I think that if there are people who are can put down the orange Kool-Aid for a little bit and not be a member of the cult and open their eyes, or they can have a change of heart where Ted Cruz realizes, you know, you attacked my wife. Like, what? You attacked my
dad. Yeah, but doesn't that come from a place, Scott, that you think Ted Cruz has a heart?
Well, that's the hope. We have to have some kind of hope. And it's okay if they let us down. It's okay to be let down and disappointed by them, because we didn't drive that anger into 2020 and use that to fuel our fire. But we definitely can't assume the Trump propaganda, like Pence is worse. That's one that he uses, which is just not true. Not even close. Not even the tentacles of Trump are disgusting and expansive, and Pence not even close, not even anywhere close. But that's a trick that they use to try and, you know, give people excuses as to why they wouldn't have to be active, so they wouldn't have to take action or protest or speak out, because it's not going to happen anyways. And so I won't talk like that. And I know that a lot of people are starting to talk in a different way. And we know, you know, we've been here before in regards to protests. We just need to show up, and we need to be peaceful and keep it so it's as loud as possible, as civil as possible, and we're as clear as possible. But the numbers are what's most important here. Yeah. Is people showing up and protesting on the scale that the United States has never seen before. If we don't do that, if people don't show up, if the public pressure is not there, then they're not going to do anything, because it's always been up to us. We're the cavalry.
No, you're absolutely right. And the thing is as I watched the swearing in, as divided as I think the Senate is, and the House as well, when they were going through taking the oath, I couldn't help but think, this is one of the most historic moments in political history in my lifetime. And I'm getting to watch this. And you can feel, I think you kind of felt it, coming out of that room, that I think some of them were taking it very seriously. I think the McConnells and the Lindsey Grahams and the rest of them, I think they're in the bag. I think they're violating their oath right from the start. But I think the American people have got to look at this in a way of, this is one of the most historic political moments of our lifetime.
Yeah, and I agree with you. There's at least 20 senators that are not even worth, they're not going to change their minds. This is not going to happen. And we understand that. I'm not going to point out who they are. But I will say that, they can choose their route. All of these crimes will be exposed, I'm guessing, before the election. So if they want to support a criminal and try and, let's just think about it like this. Think about the revolving door and people who lose elections because they freed some guy early and then they go out and murder somebody. Like, he's going to commit more crimes now. He's committing crimes at this moment, and they're going to go out and defend him. They're going to act like the other crimes don't exist. Yeah. They're going to act like he's not an unindicted co-conspirator as individual one in the Cohen case. They're going to act like he's not involved in any of the bribery cases, money laundering cases. They're going to act like he's not involved with casinos across the world. They're going to act like he's not involved in land deals with the Russians. They're going to act like he's not involved with a lot of this. But the truth, the fact is, if they want to bet their political life, if they want to be, I guess, that committed to backing him, it is catastrophic to their futures, because there is no good outcome here. Americans love the impossible to happen. And if Donald Trump thinks he couldn't be taken down by the American people, which is what's happening, he underestimated us, and yeah, he thought, he was wrong.
I saw this this clip from Fox News with some guy named Hoghead or something. He said, if you're a Republican in the era of Trump and you can't get behind defending him in this moment after the partisan action of Democrats, why are you still a Republican? And then he questioned, he goes, Mitt Romney. I sent out the oath. I solemnly swear to affirm that in all things pertaining to the trial of the impeachment of Donald J. Trump, now pending. I will do impartial justice according to the Constitution and laws, so help me God. And they took this pledge, and not to Donald Trump, not to the Republican Party, but to the Constitution. And to have someone like this hoghead guy on fake news saying, I can't understand why, you know, they're not lining up behind him, because they're not, their allegiance isn't to him. It's to we the people, our Constitution.
Yeah, if one of the things that I like to say is if Obama had done the same thing, they'd impeach immediately. They act like the world was on fire. And I would be pushing for impeachment probably more, because we have morals, we have standards, we have ethics, we have a vision, we have goals. Right. We want to take care of the American people, not act like the American people are a virus. You know what I mean? We don't want to act like, because it's not the poor who are causing the problems, it's the rich. And I think there's just this whole twisted logic, so much propaganda. And here's where it backfires, is people become numb to the propaganda, and now they're kind of used to it, which it has bad and good things, because people don't accept most news nowadays, so they don't accept anything as fact, which is, it sucks sometimes, because you have to explain it and have evidence and expand on it, and they won't just trust one news source anymore, it seems. And then some people will trust anything that they want to create in regards to their own personal world. And it's I think when this all ends up in this little bubble, you're gonna have to look at it from a lens. If you're a Republican, let's act like this was a Democrat. If this were a Democrat and I would move to impeach, then that's your answer. That's everything you need to know. And I don't believe for one second that they wouldn't want to call every single witness and drag it out as long as possible and get to the truth and the bottom of it, so they could use it as also political capital against their opponents. But and it's also, keep in mind, it's a dangerous path for them to go on. If they want to make the standard, and I said this before on your show, if they want to make the standard that internet, you know, other countries are going to start helping out our political parties, well, I'll take our allies over our adversaries. They can have our adversaries, and we'll win that fight. But we don't need them. We don't need other countries to win elections. We can win elections without them.
Well, we don't want other countries involved in our elections way or another. And I'm not even going to go down that path. And I wanted to ask you about, because, you know, Lev Parnas's name is now front and center. And I've had some people, you know, saying, oh, you know, he's going to save us. People like him and people like John Bolton are going to be, they're the heroes, and they're going to come riding in on the horse, and they're going to get him out. And I'm going, no, these are sleazy people. They may have good information that we need, but they're still sleazy people.
That's on us. We're the people who are gonna do it. We're just able to open up more information thanks to him, and put together some other dots and ask new questions and expand on what we had already known. It's not that anyone trusts him in the Democratic, that's not the case, but it is a fact that we accept. We'll listen to any potential witness, and then you confirm those facts. You don't take anyone's word for it.
Right.
Like last night, I this has happened a few weeks ago. I was digging through some video archives, as one would do on a Sunday night, of Rudy Giuliani traveling internationally that we had dug up.
Oh, yeah, exactly what we do every Sunday night.
Right, this is for fun. And, and then I just come across, there he is, there's Fruman and Parnas in the background in Paris. And what tied together was last night in the second part of the Maddow interview, he said he was in Paris with Giuliani. He talked about a story there. And I think it's just like the dossier, where you don't assume anything is true. You work backwards, where you have the things that he presented, and then you confirm what you can, and then you coincide or corroborate everything that he says with other testimony. You match that up and see how much that lines up with the truth. And so far, everything he said, for the most part, seems true. What I don't believe is the Yovanovitch thing, because I think he knows that that's a crime where people can spend decades in prison easily.
You don't think the guy was joking about taking her out? You know?
No, I think they were going to kill her.
Think they were going to kill her?
Absolutely. Yeah, they were going to kill her. No, there's no doubt in my mind. No doubt in my mind. They let Khashoggi die without, you know, notifying him that he was in danger. And, you know, Trump and Jared knew. And from what I've seen, I don't think that they would have their fingerprints on it. I think Trump probably knew she was being followed. I don't think that he would have had a problem if they had moved forward with it. I'm not sure if he would have been, you know, knowledgeable of what was going on, but I think he would have supported it
Scott, though. Are they really this stupid that they would text each other in a WhatsApp? Are they really
Is it stupid or is it cover?
Is it cover to say how much to have her taken out?
If you have things so explicit where they can be used as evidence against you in the future or used as evidence to clear your name, that's why it's funny. Everybody's saying, I have evidence. And it's like, great, present all this evidence. Wait, sorry, I threw us off track there. My apologies.
But I look at that quote and I'm like, maybe these are evil geniuses and we just don't know.
That's the thing is there's a mix of both. I think they can be both, where there's intentional stupidity to just try and distract. And then there's also a bit of, you know, evil genius sort of kind of things that come in there.
All right. Some countermeasures. All right. I just don't see Robert Hyde as the kind of genius mastermind that would pull off a hit on a U.S. ambassador. I'm struggling with that one.
I mean, it's something that, you know, someone like Eric Prince or you know, someone like that could definitely help organize if he were asked and hired. I mean, the pieces are starting to come together. I would not put it past Trump to stay silent, to know that she's being tracked, to know that she's in danger. And him being okay with it and silent about it or stalling things in ways to keep her in danger. And because, again, if he was told she says you're going to get impeached, she's against you. And then Putin tells her some other stuff, tells him some other stuff. And then he's being told by these, you know, guys that are manipulating him, basically saying, hey, they done this. And then he, you know, loses his temper. She needs to be fired and just drives that home. It's just like. There really is no bottom. You know, remember Stormy Daniels, she was threatened by somebody related.
No, it's the Trump MO. And, you know, I came across a George Orwell quote from 1984 that, you know, that caught my attention. The quote was the party told you to reject the evidence of your eyes and ears. It was their final, most essential command. And then there was a quote from Donald Trump back in 18. And just remember, what you're seeing and what you're reading is not what's happening. And I'm going, you know, is it that they're using the book 1984 as their playbook, or was George Orwell clairvoyant? I'm not sure which, but it seems like there are parallels there.
Well, do you think that if they had, let's just say they had gone up and they hurt Yovanovitch in some way, hypothetically. Do you think Trump would do anything to try and defend her? And that answer is obviously no, but like.
No, I see it a little differently. I see that they would use it as an opportunity to go after the Ukrainians. I think they would probably have framed it in a way that it was the Ukrainians who did it and that this would end up helping the Russians. I mean, that's immediately when I saw this, immediately where my mind went.
I didn't think about that. That's good. Yeah.
So, I mean, the sad thing is, and this is what's we're sitting here talking possible conspiracy theory that could have been true.
Right.
That's pulled off. This is like bad dime store detective novels.
But that's also what they've done in the past is they've formulated things so they sound sort of like movies and so that people don't believe them. A lot of times that happened with the Russia scandal a lot. There'd be different parts of it where it's like, you know, the Russians were manipulating some Americans, and the Americans thought it was like spycraft, but it was just Russians controlling some Americans. And it's just, you know, it's funny to watch sometimes and sad. I was empathetic, but yeah, it's man, this is going to be a I'm guessing starting Tuesday, you, me, and everybody else, we're going to have to be prepared for. I mean, we're talking about propaganda at a level that we've never seen before in world history.
No, this you're absolutely right.
It's all, this is, if you see the results of a cyber war, this will be the peak of it, I'm guessing. The impeachment trial, or I like to call it the removal trial, because he's already been impeached. You know, we're headed down a road where I think that he could be removed because of the evidence. And again, based on everything I've seen in his involvement with the mob for decades and everything he's ever done, I absolutely think that he knew that Yovanovitch was getting tracked. Trump knew that Yovanovitch was getting tracked. That's based on everything I've seen. And also, if she were in danger, I do believe he wouldn't care. And but you're right about that, that they're also known for making the best, quote unquote, of a situation. So if she were to get hurt, and it's just like, we shouldn't have to ask these questions.
No, you're
like,
right.
There should be no question. Like, that person should be protected. Everyone around there should be arrested, or at least detained and questioned immediately. Everyone, like, this is not a laughing matter or a joke. It shouldn't take a week for Pompeo to step out there today and say, oh, we're going to look into it. No, say the word investigation. Words matter. These people are a joke. They're all pathetic. I'm sick and tired of these lamos, and I think Americans are too. Anyways.
No, you're right. Short. But, you know, what's interesting is just the other day you had the Government Accountability Office who came out with the statement that
yesterday,
you know, by holding off the funding for Ukraine, the Office of Budget and Management, or Management and Budget, OMB, that they violated the law. And to me, this is, you know, this is one of those things that should be in evidence. They violated the law by not doing what they were supposed to do, what Congress said they had to do, and who was behind it. It was Donald Trump, and he's already admitted to it.
Right, GAO, Government Accountability Office. But, and it's independent of the government, but basically, U.S. government told everybody that Donald Trump broke the law, and it when he withheld the Ukrainian funds. And like, that withholding is directly linked to his Putin advising him. And so there's so many strings attached here. I mean, it's a reporter's or true journalist dream, because there's so many legs to this now. This is bad.
No, like, you're right. And hey, you know, the two reporters over at the Washington Post, I guess, who came out with the book, The Very Stable Genius, or I guess it's coming out, couldn't have had a better time for this, because, you know, from the excerpts that I'm reading, I actually have to go run out and buy this book now just to find out, because I know this guy's stupid. I know he's ignorant of most basic facts of history and diplomacy and politics. I get that. But I really want to see how low it goes. The fact that he knew nothing about Pearl Harbor, the fact that he claimed that he wanted to make bribery great again. He was ticked off. He couldn't bribe people openly. I mean, it's just remarkable. And this is the guy that, well, the Republicans in the Senate are basing their career on. And that's what's amazing to me.
I think, you know, I guess if you're in the Senate and you're a Republican, you like getting cover from the clown, you know, like, you like being able to do whatever you do, and it's not going to be as bad as what he's done. It's not going to, like, any scandal, you don't have to resign because it's happened to him, and you compare it and be like, well, Trump stayed in office too, so I'll be fine. I mean, this is how corruption spreads. And then when you have people who sit on their hands and don't take action, like all the pathetic and weak people who let Trump make a lot of monstrous decisions and carried them out on his behalf. Every single person that has ever been involved with the Trump campaign, the transition, the inaugural committee, His White House and his administration will be stained for life, because this is not, if you think of anyone, let's just say, who worked for Nixon outside of John Dean, it didn't really work out for their futures very well. With this is going to be so much worse, because eventually it will be known as treason, and people who committed treason against the United States, and a lot of the things that they did will eventually be illegal in a few years. So this is just the beginning of this whole mess. I can tell you that I'm going to spend my life unraveling it, and I know you will as well. I'm not going to give up on it ever. Good. When he leaves office, it may, you know, we'll focus who's in charge, but we're never going to let go of what's happened here. We're going to make sure that everybody's held accountable.
And hopefully hopefully make sure it never happens again. Right. And let's talk a little bit about November real quick, because Iowa caucus coming up. I just had the last debate before the Iowa caucus. I didn't think there was much there other than the snubbed handshake, which I don't even make a big deal about. Curious your thoughts going into the Iowa caucus. Who's leading the horse race? What are you seeing?
I'm not sure what Sanders and Warren, what that the whole deal was about. But I know that distracts from everybody else. Yeah. I know that keeps them at the top of the headlines. So I just don't think that they're as adversarial as that. They're just letting the press kind of run with it, I guess. Yeah,
but don't you think that it's driving a wedge between, we've now reinvented the Bernie bros, and now you've got the other side. You're really causing this wedge now that, you know, as I said the other day, I don't think now if this continues to take legs, either one of them have got a shot.
It's going to happen no matter what. They're going to use ways to divide us. And what we're going to have to do is not take the bait. And we're going to have to weed out who's real, who's not, who's making real comments on this, who's a real American, who should be involved with this process, and who's not. Because the social media, and they're not going to do it for us. Right. So we need to vet our own people. And that's going to be key in overcoming that kind of propaganda push from them.
Yeah, you picking one or the other, or you staying neutral in all this?
You see, you like how I did that without picking one?
And that's why I came back to it.
I know. I always say Michelle Obama, but that's not going to happen. I right now don't see a clear 100% front runner. And I think it's like an Obama thing. After you've worked for him, it's hard to see other people in that role in general, maybe as a when there's a nominee, but I'm only going to be supporting the nominee based on right now. I'd say that if Bernie can pick up some steam, if he renames whatever he's referring to as socialism, he can't use that word. No. It's not popular in the United States, and that would be popular. We'll get our butts whooped. We'll lose the House. We'll not win back the Senate, and we will not win the White House, period. Like, that's not possible. So I'm guessing he'll rename it to, like, Bernieism or something like that, because you just can't – you're not going to be able to reshape, generations of hatred against socialism in one election. It's not going to happen. He's got a shot. Warren's got a shot. Buttigieg, I don't think has the same opportunities or endorsements or backing that he'd be needed to kind of wedge into that two or three spot. And I think right now, just based on what I'm seeing, like, Biden seems to be formalizing a real campaign. And then there's one campaign that is going to slide, I think, into second above Bernie and Warren.
Don't say Bloomberg.
Yeah.
Don't say Bloomberg.
I see a candidate in North Carolina. I think there's two. I think Warren and Bloomberg. And then there's I think Bloomberg is in all 50 states now. Like, he.
Yeah, money will get you that quickly.
Yeah, I think he's got over 1,000 staffers, which is more than Hillary had a couple months before the end of the campaign. And like, so we're talking about real money. He's also helping in regards to buying up ad time close to the election so that other people.
He's got the Super Bowl ad.
Right. So that's going to be interesting. Steyer's on the outside still looking in. Yang's gaining a lot of steam, but I think at the end of the day, I don't think that anyone else new is going to pop up magically But I think that as of right now, you know, it's between the everybody that's on the stage.
All right. It's everybody who's ever.
It literally is up for grabs. Like, it really could be. Someone's just got to find their lane and just keep on hitting that hard.
All right.
I don't see a real front runner, but I do see people when they go to the polls feeling nostalgic and wanting that feeling from 2008.
No, I see that. Absolutely.
And they see and just to see Biden and Obama out on the campaign trail together again is something that is very valuable. That's going to happen no matter what. So, you know, I just, based on organizational prowess and things like that, I think Bloomberg is going to sneak up in there in polling and elsewhere. And he's surprised me all over the place with different people in the Midwest that I've spoken with that are leaders, people embracing him, people getting hired and taking jobs with him. He's hiring very smart social media people that I would never have thought would work for him. And again, I'm not working for any of these people. I don't get paid by any of these people. I never will. I won't even work for the nominee. I will only support them. But yeah, I think that if like someone like Yang can find a way to, you know, edge in, that's a possibility still. But things are running out of time. And I think at the end of the day, it's going to be something along the lines of like a Biden and Abrams ticket, or if Warren
Biden Harris is where I was going.
Yeah, that's a Klobuchar as a VP nom is another choice. But, you know, my hope is that we choose the best candidate, not the candidate we think will win, because that's how we lose. And
there
so as long as we choose whoever is the best candidate, again, I try to stay as
you've done a masterful job of dancing around the question of who do you think is going to go there.
I mean, I'm biased. I used to, when I was at the Progressive Caucus, I had the opportunity to work with Warren and Sanders, and I've obviously worked on, you know, a bunch of stuff under Biden. I don't know Pete very well. I know a lot of friends that work for him, and you know, with Yang, that's more of a new crew. But yeah, right. So I've got too many.
Too much in there to make
too
a
many
choice.
Questions. Yeah, I don't talk to any. Basically, I don't talk to any of them.
There
I don't
you
talk
go.
To any of them. But I do. You know, as of right now, if the election were held today, I would guess that Biden is able to pull away with it. But I would not underestimate Bernie Sanders.
All right. There we go.
And again, which is a debate that I honestly would.
You've just started a firestorm. Congratulations.
Yeah, you're welcome. No, I wanted to give props to everybody. That's why I wanted to go down the line. Klobuchar's got her own thing going on as well. But I think that, again, there's like those three. And it's going to be one of those top three is my guess. And
you sure
again,
you want to throw a good word in for the janitor?
Oh, yeah. I just want to thank Marianne for leaving the race. Oh, Tom Steyer's in the race, too. So that's a thing.
Make sure you get them all.
Yeah.
How about your great uncle?
He was helpful for me. I tell you what, like, we needed that. We didn't have infusion of cash at that level. And, you know, we started the first impeachment campaign, but his help with ads really did help. I mean, on a massive scale.
Yeah, yeah. No, Steyer's ads really did help.
That's all I'm saying.
You're right. So you've given credit to everybody, a very DC way of going about it. I give you props for that. But Scott, I appreciate the time, man. Good stuff.
Anytime, man. Again, my favorite nominee, Michelle Obama.
There you go. All right. Well, there it is. Scott, I appreciate the time. Thanks so much. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. Oh, right back.
The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1915. It was the day that the people of Chicago